From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. We learned this week how Native Americans feel about Senator Elizabeth Warren's claims of having Native American ancestry. Warren took a DNA test to demonstrate that many generations ago, she probably had at least one Native ancestor. That prompted a discussion about what identity means, particularly for Native peoples.
In this clip, you'll hear Ronnie Pollack, executive director of the Native American Cultural Center. She agrees with the statement from the Cherokee Nation, saying that DNA testing is not how you establish anything when it comes to connection to a tribe.
It's hurtful because what she represents is oftentimes, as a Native American person myself, you know, oftentimes throughout my entire life, I'll have people come up to me like, oh, I'm part Native, or I've heard that, you know, my grandfather, I mean, kind of much like, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren is saying, you know, my great, 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 great grandmother or grandfather was part Cherokee or part Lakota or something like that. And what it does is it diminishes our identity to a novelty item. And that's what it really feels like. Like it's just this token thing that somebody gets to say and represent. Like, oh, but I, you know, I heard that many, many years ago, you know, throughout my family lineage that there is some Native American, you know, blood in there. So, I'm going to tote that as well, too. And so it's hurtful in that regard because it then just, you know, almost like, for lack of a better term, cheapens it to this novelty item.
Well, and so I think there's a difference between what you're saying there and sort of using it or try to claiming it or cheapening it. Versus, let's say you did a really good family tree and you figured out that you had Native ancestry going way back that you didn't know about. If that was true for me, I would find it, and I want to be careful with how I describe it. I would not claim it as sort of modern day me. I'm Native American. But I would tell my son, look, we are a human race where we are all on the same planet here. And unfortunately, European people in particular came to this continent and did really gruesome, terrible things that we have to understand with and sort of deal with. But part of all of us is some kind of connection. That's as far as I would take it, I think. That's different than saying, yeah, well, high cheekbones today, and you know, and kind of in sort of cartoonish ways.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I think, too, when I can, you know, have that connection with my mom, that she lost her identity, you know, and how hurtful that was. And even my grandmother, she was an unfortunate survivor of, fortunate that she survived, but unfortunate that she was a member of the residential school system as well, too. So when somebody finds out that they have that very small blood quantum, you know, that dates back many, many, many generations, and then they say, oh, well, I'm the same as you. You know, my question is, well, did your parent suffer from losing their identity, you know, and what kind of damage was done as a result of that? Or did your grandparent, you know, or even maybe a great grandparent, were they, an unfortunate recipient of having to be forced into the residential school system?
Next, a conversation about the danger members of law enforcement and the media face while doing their jobs. Back on October 10th, Rochester police chased a suspect in multiple shootings as he drove a U-Haul through city streets. The public watched the suspect and law enforcement exchange gunfire through videos posted by journalists who were at the scene.
One of those journalists was Democrat and Chronicle lead photographer Max Schulte. In this clip, he describes what it felt like to be caught in the middle of the story and in the middle of the gunfire.
Wednesday morning, I arrived at the DNC newsroom to start my shift, and we heard a radio call come over that there had been a double shooting.
Get right on your mic for me,
sorry.
Buddy.
That's sorry, right. Bud.
I know you're usually not on the mic. I get it.
So the radio call comes in. RPD's responding to a double shooting. We're also getting some word that one of those shootings is possibly fatal. A photographer sitting across from me runs out to catch that. And the next thing we know, we've got another phone or another radio call coming in over RPD stating that a man had been shot at School 25 on the playground. That's an unusual call to hear and something that we jump on immediately. So I just picked up my gear, I got in a car, and I flew over there as fast as I could. It turns out that the subject had been wounded in the upper body. It was not a life-threatening situation. He had already been transported by the ambulance. And So we're watching this dynamic where parents are showing up at the school very concerned. They're very concerned for their children. They're concerned for the safety of, you know, their community and the kids within the building. And so that is the story that we start to cover, you know, as these, you know, concerned parents coming to pick their kids up at the school that just had this incident take place, you know, several feet from their playground. The shooting, I believe, did not occur actually on the playground, but the man then stumbled into the playground, which then, you know, caused concern for the school administration there and principals, and they, I think, immediately went into a lockdown situation. As this is all kind of unfolding very calmly, very routinely, it seems, you know, almost, you know, textbook, I start to notice officers down the street pulling out long guns, a little heavier artillery than what you normally see.
In a minute, Sheriff, we'll correct any of the terminology.
Yeah, right.
He's accurate.
Okay, very good. Okay.
And they seem to be in a state of heightened alert. And that's when I kind of made my way down to the intersection of North Goodman and Forrester Street, because that's, where the action kind of was happening. And we're typically drawn to, you know, the action. We're looking to show what's happening, you know, what the responses are and what's taking place, you know, as, you know, crime scenes or incidents like this, you know, unfold. You can hear a little shudder in my voice. I'm just kind of a little trying to react this here. It brings back a little bit of the time. So I'm just trying to take this slowly so I can do it accurately. And so this unfolds, and Will Morgan, we just mentioned, comes down and stands next to me, and he says, "Man, I think this guy's heading our way." And I took up a position by a tree along the sidewalk so that I could, you know, maybe have something to kind of like be behind if there was a vehicle chase coming or something like that. And sure enough, all of a sudden I turn left, or I look south on North Goodman down to Bay, and there goes the van, and there goes about another 20 cop cars behind it. And then I, you know, about 2 minutes later, I look north, and the van goes by on Hudson, and we're literally surrounded. We're in a sea of police vehicles. The SWAT vehicle was in that chase. And I thought that was the last we'd see of, you know, Mr. Blake in the van. Well, I look down the street, and here comes the van at us. And I turned the camera on and started rolling. And he made the turn on the North Forest. And if you watch the video, you'll hear the gunshots, and you'll see him try to basically, I think, fire on the officers that he was going by as he was making this right-hand turn through a barricade. I believe there was RPD and sheriff's officers manning that barricade. And then he continues down North Forest and makes a left onto the street where he eventually was shot and killed.
In the video that we see from you, the window, the driver's window, gets shot out.
So yeah, you do see a lot of gunfire. You see actually smoke, barrel smoke from, you know, law enforcement officers discharging their firearms at a very close range. Whether that window, I'm not a expert in law enforcement, whether that window is being blown out or blown in, I think is up for debate.
Okay.
I know that gun was pointed at, the gun that Mr. Blake had in the van was pointed at Will Morgan from Channel 13. If you look at his video, you can see him clearly pointing that gun at him. I later went and reviewed my video from that, from further down the road. And when I mean further down the road, as the van approaches, I'm looking at through the windshield as Mr. Blake's van is approaching towards me. And I've slowed down the video, and you can clearly see him pointing a handgun out the window. Or I shouldn't say out the window, but towards the window, because the window was rolled up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, again, getting back to the glass in or out, I think from a ballistic standpoint, if you shoot at something, you know, you would see, tend a bullet would go through something and blow in. If something's blowing out, that means a projectile is possibly coming out as well. Or maybe that gun was so close that the concussion you know, from sure. that weapon yeah. being fired blew the window out.
But there's a number of shots, and you know, how close do you think you were? 40 feet at the time? 30 feet?
Probably closer to 20.
20 feet.
20, 15.
Closest you've been to active gunfire?
Well, I shot skeet and trap all through college.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
I'm an avid hunter. I've been around gunfire. This is a different type of gunfire. This is obviously a heavy barrage of, you know, of noise that, you know, frankly, has kept me up at night a couple of times since this all happened. So it was shocking. It was something that, as I heard it go off, I said, don't, in the back of my head, I was like, don't flinch. Just don't flinch. You got to just keep rolling. Just keep rolling. And don't let that affect, you know, don't let this affect you right now.
Can I just ask you briefly then? Let's get our colleagues' hats off, and just as your friend.
Yeah.
I'd have been okay with you getting behind that tree and not thinking, don't flinch.
I think it happened all so fast that if I was in journalist mode. I really was. I wasn't in a flight or fight mode. I equate it to, you know, being a surgeon. I mean, when a surgeon is, you know, performing surgery, they're not concerned with the blood squirting, you know, all over. They're trying to save somebody's life. I wasn't concerned with jumping behind a tree. I was concerned with getting the picture or getting the video.
We'll close the week with a heavy but important conversation. One of our guests has worked in the field of nuclear nonproliferation. Bharat Gopalaswamy works on South Asian affairs for the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C., and he visited Rochester as a guest of the local chapter of the World Affairs Council.
On Connections, he talked about what happens if a nuclear weapon is detonated in a major world city, and he admitted that the last few years have reversed some of the progress in reducing nuclear stockpiles.
Right now, I don't have the optimism or there is no momentum on this, but that does not mean we have to give up the cause. This is where conversations like this had in Rochester and places like these, the movements sometimes have to be grassroots movements.
Sure.
And I'm glad that we're having this conversation.
Sure, because, I mean, certainly in the political sphere, there's a lot of other things to dominate the conversation. But on the scale of possible devastation to the world, I understand climate change, I understand all kinds of other things. But a nuclear weapon going off in a major population center
yeah.
is going to change the world forever. Mm-hmm. And as I raise my son, it's one of my greatest fears that he will grow up in a world where that happens, because all bets are off when that happens.
Right. I mean, it's a, you know, in some sense, it's a low probability event, but a high impact.
Low probability, but you're the one who just said that the theory of accidents says that eventually it will happen.
Correct. Yeah. You know, we've come close to the training tape incident with Norway. You know, you read all these stories all the time where you're always about a button away. You're always about a finger away from pressing the button.
Yeah.
Some of these, you know, that possibly, the accidental possibility is always there. The bad actor theory is always there. So, and with an increasing stockpile, you know, why are we taking that risk? Why are we allowing ourselves to get that risk?
Did you, during the campaign, did you sort of observe the president not really knowing what the nuclear triad was? Was that a concern for you?
Yeah. And plus, the Senate also commissioned last year around this time, you know, about the mental health of the institution that will safeguard the American nukes. So, I mean, these are serious issues, you know.
Okay. And so if 2 to 4 years, you don't have a lot of hope to change, but let's talk, you know, a little bit into the future, and you're part of a team putting policy together to really start reducing stockpiles. Who has to act first? What are some of the barriers that will come down, and how do we get there?
Look, I think some of the barriers here are primarily the way that our own politics is. We're such a divided nation today. We're not able to get consensus on any issue very quickly. I can see this being politicized. You know, if we are not able to ratify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty in 1999, 20 years later, with this kind of political climate, how are we able to forge a consensus on an issue like this about giving nuclear weapons? It's not about even banning testing at an international level. We're talking about giving nukes. And that's where I think my sense of optimism decreases.
In this country, there is going to inevitably be some sort of political debate that says, well, you're weak if you give up those weapons, mm-hmm. That you're jeopardizing this country's safety. My own very amateur observation of President Obama was that he might very well have been someone who was much more interested in an aggressive course of stockpile reduction and all kinds of sort of nebulously more peaceful ideas. But he also had to play this political game of not looking weak, not looking weak as the first president of color. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all kinds of things I think he had to consider that complicated the that is the amateur observation I have. I wonder how you view
it. I think you put it right. And I think you the adjective was the aggressive. The adverb was aggressive, sorry. And Obama pursued some of these, and he laid out his vision. It was an ambitious and an aggressive vision that he laid out in his Prague speech. And I think that's where it became politicized. And I think being the recipient of the Nobel Prize, so you had put symbolism before substance. Mm. And we needed to do a lot of work on the substance. We needed to restore our faith in these multilateral institutions that could take the lead to get to where we need to get to. Yes, we had to take the leadership role, but simultaneously, we also needed to work with those international institutions to complement our efforts in some of these, to advance in some of these critical areas, and then, you know, work through our own political process.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. Hope we've given you some things to think about. And think about sharing this with your friends if you could. We always appreciate when our listeners will do that. This is a good way for us to kind of condense what we've been doing throughout the week. And we, of course, publish Weekend Connections every Friday afternoon. You can hear Connections, regular talk show, on weekday afternoons, AM 1370, noon to 2, WRUR 88.5 FM, and on WEOS, that's Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM.
We are also on the WXXI mobile app, and we're at the end of our fall membership drive, so thank you to everyone who has called in and supported WXXI and Connections in particular, and you can still do that if you go online to WXXI.org and click that donate button. So thank you to everyone. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we will talk to you Monday.